Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Ex-NFL players sue over concussions. Michelle Bachmann's thugs rough up a reporter. And TriMet vows to crack down on freeloaders.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, July 20th, 2011. The days of merely getting a slap on the wrist for riding MAX trains without a fare are over, according to TriMet. Even first-time offenders will get a $175 ticket if fare inspectors catch them riding the MAX without paying for it, they announced today. TriMet General Manager Neil McFarlane is expanding the number of staff performing fare inspections. Six new supervisors have been hired. These supervisors have been told to shy away from warning and issuing citations and even exclusions if riders are found without a valid fare. Exclusions can extend up to 90 days. In recent years, the majority of riders received only a warning if found without a fare. Some TriMet riders say it's a natural response from TriMet and the crackdown will help put a stop to the freeloaders. Man in the street and TriMet customer Peter Morrow said, "If there isn't any police around or anyone checking for fares, people might think it's time to take advantage of that. I'm from the East Coast, and I've ridden trains all my life. I think that's just part of the system."
The time for scofflaws of getting away with things is over, Dawn.
That's right.
Has passed. Now we have entered a new phase, which we call string them up by the balls.
That's right,
by their Buster Browns.
We got those TriMet cops. Cops, of course.
Seriously, you try that
in air quotes.
You try that in New York, they'll kill you. Yeah. I mean, subway cops in New York will just flat out beat you to death right there, and they will leave you on the tracks as a warning to the others, to be nibbled on and gnawed upon by rats and rodents. The shame of your family and the house of Euripides.
Yeah, I think the TriMet cops that we have here in Portland are guys that who their previous job was like a security guard at Whole Foods.
So you say that now, but that's exactly the kind of talk that proves them, that drives them to prove otherwise, Dawn.
That's right.
By making an example of someone, and by someone, I mean you.
I say give them nightsticks and tasers and pepper spray and just let them go to town.
That's right.
Ellen Marie Murray, who rides the MAX every day, said she already sees train passengers play a cat and mouse game with the fare inspectors, hopping from one train to another to avoid them. McFarlane said TriMet cheaters have been noticeable in this 1 year of, what? Have been a noticeable problem in his 1 year in charge of the transit agency.
Not the only noticeable problem.
Yeah. He said, "The change sends a clear message to our riders. that they need to pay their fare or face a stiff fine, even for the first offense.
Well, the only problem is the people who are typically violating the law, the people who don't have any money. It's just a bunch of dirt-covered kids wearing a padlock as a necklace. I mean, and it's like, how much money do they, you know, they've blown all their cash on Manic Panic. How are they possibly... It seems like if you don't have the $1.50 to ride the max or whatever it costs, the idea that you're going to be able to fork over $250 to the man when he catches you, I mean, that's the odds of that, I would say, are... They're negligible. It's going to be like, you know, it's going to be the couple who was the behind me at the 7-Eleven this morning where they were trying to figure out how much money they had in their food card to see whether or not she could get an Arctic Blast flavored Gatorade. And no, she only had 80 cents left in her. What is it? Is it the Oregon Trail card?
Yes.
80 cents left in the Oregon Trail card. So then they decided they were going to stand in front of the 7-Eleven as long as it took to try to just squeegee money out of people so she could go inside and get said said Gatorade. Because again, only 80 cents left on her on her Oregon Trail card. That person
some days only a Gatorade will bring you back to life after, say, a night of heavy meth use.
Exactly. So it seems like they're probably not going to have the $150 or whatever it is to pay off the man. So I think the man ought to be able to extract this by just, maybe removing a little bit of spinal fluid.
Yeah.
You know, or
just,
anything he can sell on the open market.
Slap you around a little bit.
Seriously, I would offer to alibi. I'll hold them down. I'll take pictures for your family photo album. You can show them at the next barbecue, whatever it is you want. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for coming by. We are here at Cascadia.fm. Coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, the Rick Emerson radio program. Today we'll be talking with thrice-weekly Oregonian columnist Anna Griffin. Also, Clergy Watch, Job Watch, Jackson Watch, and more. That is all on the way at RickEmersonShow.com. Here at Legion of News, don't forget, you can get this program later on the day right here at Cascadia.fm or LegionofNews.com or via iTunes. You can take it with you on the road if you like.
So you can listen to it over and over and over again.
Well, and like to torment your coworkers with it. Like, say you got some particularly disagreeable chick that's always like wearing a lot of perfume or a guy that always lets the coffee scorch. You can punish them with the sound of my shrill nasal delivery all the live long day. That's what technology allows you to do. You can do that by taking it with you on your mobile device as well. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Two men installing gutters Tuesday, which would be yesterday, on a Northwest Portland apartment building, contacted a power line and severely burned themselves, falling to the ground. Portland Fire Bureau officials said both men suffered life-threatening injuries at the property on Northwest 24th and Quimby and were taken to Emmanuel Hospital. The men were identified as Louis Avila, 34, who was listed in critical condition, and Jacob Sturker, 28, listed in serious condition at the hospital's Oregon Burn Center. Both men work for the Great Northwest Gutter Company. OSHA has begun an investigation into the incident. Public Information Officer Paul Cora said in a press release, "This tragic accident is a reminder to be aware of your surroundings. When working on ladders or above ground, make sure you check for overhead power lines before starting work. Electrical shocks can be deadly."
But Don, what if your kite winds around a power line?
I keep telling you, I'm not from these parts. I don't know that, that ad.
That's right, comrade. I never remember that you're not from around here.
I didn't grow up here. I did not grow up with the talking kite or whatever
Don
that
Taylor,
was.
If that is your real name. Mm. All right, I understand. It's funny that you, because right before the show, you actually asked me about, what was you asked me something about this.
Well, I asked you if you had ever tracked down, because we had talked about you tracking down that one of those ads.
The Mr. Kite ads.
Yeah.
And the answer to that is no. Mm. And here's how I know that nobody has tracked it down yet, at least nobody that I've come into contact with, because... long story short, and I just put something on Twitter about this. So earlier this morning, I was taping an episode of Outlook Portland in Beaverton, and our guest today was we had a guy named Dan Kogan, who is the general manager of the Burgerville at 82nd and Gleason, and Jeff Harvey, who is actually the CEO and president of Burgerville USA. And we were talking about Burgerville and the 50th anniversary and how long they've been part of the Northwest culture and et cetera, et cetera. And this guy, Chris Bilbao, who actually films the show, he's the cameraman and editor, just begins singing this Burgerville jingle from the early 1970s, which I had actually not ever heard before because I was growing up in Washington State and we didn't have a Burgerville anywhere near my hometown. I think we still don't. And so he's singing the jingle, and so suddenly Dan and Chris are both singing this Burgerville jingle from 1970-something. And that got us into a whole discussion about jingles that you only heard in the Northwest growing up, which immediately led Dan to turn to me and say, "I swear to God, this just happened this morning." He said, "Well, do you remember the Mr. Kite commercial?" And I said, "Do I ever?" And then there was this big three-handed discussion about the Mr. Kite spot and whether anybody had ever been able to track it down. And I said that I had spent years trying to cajole the audience into just beating every possible bush they could find to try to find a copy of the Mr. Kite spot. And that the closest anybody had ever come was my friend Mike Chase, who managed to track down the guy who played Mr. Kite himself For the Mike and Amy show. Anyway, ba-da-da-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. So then all morning, the three of us are just walking around going, what if your kite whines around a power line? It's a whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. And so and here we have a tale of tragic electricity mayhem.
I'm just saying, if there was ever a day in which somebody was going to find the Mr. Kite electrical safety spot, this would be the day. I mean, because it's not just amusing. It's not just not just something we're viewing for purposes of pure nostalgia. This is actually news you can use, Don. This is a thing where knowing is like 89% of the battle.
Sure. If you turn on the turntable sound for my laptop here, I do have the second best thing, though.
Should we save this for next hour?
No, I could do it right now. I think it's educational.
All right, then. Trusting your judgment.
It's the funnest game in the whole wide world.
I chose poorly.
Wheels on the electric fence.
The electric fence.
There you go.
No, I should have just overruled you that time.
Oh, come on.
Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Don't whiz on the electric fence.
Yes, because it's peeing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it will kill you. A body found last week by police on Rocky Butte has been positively identified as that of murdered Portland teenager Yashani Vaughn. The Oregon State Medical Examiner made a positive identification of the 14-year-old by DNA testing. Investigators determined the cause of death was a gunshot wound to the head. A vigil was held near Rocky Butte last night, marking 4 months to the day that Yashani was last seen. She disappeared in northeast Portland on March 19th and was reported missing by her mother 2 days later. Detectives arrested suspect 16-year-old Parrish Bennett, who led police to where the body was. The district attorney said no sentencing deal was made for the information that led to the remains. Vaughn's mother, Shakita Lewis, said Tuesday, "This is the biggest part that I wanted, is to find my daughter, and I got her, but we're still far over with it, from over with this." Prosecutors believe Bennett shot Vaughn twice at his home and covered up the crime scene where her blood showed up in forensic testing. A gun used in the crime was later handed off to Bennett's friends, police believe. Family members said that they know Bennett did not act alone, speaking before the vigil, and they say they hope that her memory will bring together the community for prayer and peace for all of their children.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Later on this hour, entertainment news, also Science on the March, and next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program at RickEmersonShow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
75 former players are reportedly suing the NFL, claiming that the league intentionally withheld knowledge of the serious effects of concussions for nearly 90 years. According to TMZ.com, the lawsuit claims that the NFL knew as early as the 1920s of the harmful effects of the player's brain on concussions. However, until June of 2010, they concealed the facts from coaches, trainers, players, and the public. The plaintiffs are seeking unspecified damages.
If only there was some sort of a profession where people actually spent their careers talking about the effects of damage on the human body or the way the human body operates. If only there was somebody you could go ask, maybe make an appointment to sit in an office and talk to a guy about how your body works and what might harm it. Well, maybe someday.
But, I mean, honestly, it's the NFL. Who would be a better expert than the people who are paying your salary to run around and get hit in the head on how dangerous it is to get hit in the head?
Mm-hmm.
Why would they lie? According to the report, the group includes former Pro Bowlers Rodney Hampter of the New York Giants and Mark Duper of the Miami Dolphins, along with Super Bowl MVP Otis Anderson. NFL star Dave Duerson killed himself earlier this year, asking that his brain be studied for repeated head trauma. His former wife, Alicia Duerson, is not part of the news lawsuit, but she agrees with the premise.
I truly believe the NFL must have known on some level because there were always doctors present, you know, with these guys.
Duerson says it's troubling not to be part of the lawsuit.
The 12 families who have lost their loved ones and their husbands or fathers did have CTE, I feel like we're the families who they're probably needed to help in this lawsuit as well.
Duerson also says the head trauma completely changed her husband.
For him to just get simple things like directions or having to write things down constantly as reminders for himself, and he was aggravated a lot.
I will say, however, that actually sounds like me.
Yeah, well.
And I never played football.
Well, maybe you just don't remember.
I did fall on my head a couple of times real hard as a baby. Maybe it's just catching up with me now.
Maybe some sort of an accident while shoeing a horse?
I don't remember, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Yeah, I just made that joke like 5 seconds ago.
I know, and I forgot it already.
Okay. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
NFL spokesman Greg Aiello, by the way, issued a statement Tuesday saying the NFL had not yet seen the complaint but would vigorously contest any claims of this kind. The suit reportedly alleges the NFL waited until 2010 to admit that multiple concussions can affect memory and cause dementia and chronic traumatic encephalopathy, a degenerative brain condition that's been linked to the death of several former NFL players. A Prineville, Oregon man was too drunk to know what he was doing when he shot and killed his roommate, a jury has found. The Bend Bulletin reports 71-year-old Richard Brenneman was convicted Tuesday of manslaughter in the death of his roommate, but avoided a murder charge. The November 6, 2009 shooting in the Easy Living Trailer Park started with an argument with 54-year-old Voy Powell. Brenneman fired a handgun at Powell and struck him in the leg and abdomen. Brenneman had a blood alcohol content of 0.18 at the time of the shooting. An autopsy of Powell showed his blood alcohol at about 0.23. And so the jury decided that he was too drunk to actually know what he was doing. Therefore, it was manslaughter and not murder.
So maybe he thought he was doing what? I mean, did he think that he was plunging a toilet?
Well, I guess it wasn't premeditated, is what they're saying.
Well, that's not the same thing as not knowing what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, it seems like words have meanings, and that means that you think you're slicing a ham sandwich, really beheading a cheerleader. Mm. This doesn't sound like that. This sounds like he went and got the gun and he pointed at the guy and he shot him. So that is kind of knowing what you're doing. You can say that maybe upon reflection it was a bad idea, or maybe if you had it to do over again, you might have resolved that dispute over the chessboard differently. But I don't understand how things work in this country. Like, a great deal of the time, probably 88% of the time.
Well, you know, he was all liquored up on the devil's juice there. Mm-hmm. And so Satan was in him. I think that's what they're saying.
Okay. And this was where? Just because I want to know where I can go and then just use whiskey as an excuse for whatever horrible behavior I want to engage in.
Prineville, Oregon.
All right. Excellent.
Michelle Bachmann, turns out, suffers from frequent stress-induced headaches that incapacitate her for days at a time, according to former aides. When she gets them, frankly, she can't function at all, an unnamed former advisor said. It's not like a little thing with a couple of Advils. It's bad. The migraines are so bad and so intense, she carries and takes all sorts of pills, prevention pills, pills during the migraine, pills after the migraine to keep them under control. She has to take these pills wherever she goes.
I hope she doesn't run for a job that would require any sort of stress or that would put her in any sort of migraine-inducing scenarios.
So this report, published by the website The Daily Caller, claims that Bachmann suffers from one of her debilitating headaches on an average of once a week and that they have forced her to go to the hospital at least three times. Her camp is pushing back hard on these rumors, claiming that her headaches are never so bad that she can't do her job. Meanwhile, this entire story took kind of a weird turn yesterday, with Time magazine reporting that Bachmann's staff appeared to rough up an ABC News reporter who was following Bachmann in an attempt to get her to answer a question about whether she'd ever missed a House vote because of one of her migraines. The alleged incident happened at a campaign rally in Aiken, South Carolina, after Bachmann ignored ABC's Brian Ross's original question. According to Time magazine's Michael Crowley, and this is his report, Ross pursued her into the parking area behind the stage. Her aides grew alarmed when Ross made a beeline for the white SUV waiting to carry Bachmann away. Two Bachmann men pounced on him, grabbing and pushing him multiple times with what looked to me like unusual force. In fact, I have never seen a reporter treated so roughly at a campaign event, especially not a presidential one. Ross was finally able to break away and lob his question at Bachmann one more time, but she ignored him. Afterward, I asked Ross, who's a hard-nosed pro who nevertheless seemed slightly shaken, whether he'd ever been treated so roughly. He answered, a few times, mostly by mafia people.
Did you say that this was like filmed or captured? It seems like there's a lot of press around. They'd have, you know, what do you call it, pictures?
I don't think there's actually video of this. I think they're just basically going, though, on the fact that this is a Time magazine reporter talking about a fellow reporter at ABC News and saying that he saw this happen.
And it was happening where? I mean, what was the context?
There was a campaign event, a campaign rally in South Carolina. Bachmann was leaving. She didn't take any questions from reporters at the event. She was on her way to her SUV, and Brian Ross of ABC followed after her and was calling after her, have you ever missed any House votes because of your headaches? And she ignored him. So he kept following her towards her car. And as he was following her, two of her bodyguard, thugs, campaign aides, whatever you want to call them, grabbed him and started roughing him up.
Excellent. I'm just for roughing people up. I mean, really, in general. It doesn't matter who they are, what they're doing, what side of the ideological aisle they're on. I'm just for I'm just for violence, really, in almost every scenario in every case. That's how every story should end here. Doesn't matter what we have, you know. Could be some sort of a...
And then they were tased.
Yeah, some sort of a festive birthday party for children where there's a, you know, where there's a magical elf who's there and he's conjuring cake out of people's hats. And then suddenly there's just a large explosion that happens, leaving only a smoldering crater behind. I'm just saying, like in my world.
Okay. I can see that.
All right.
The sentencing hearing for Brian Cole is scheduled for Wednesday at the Multnomah County Courthouse. Cole is facing a life sentence of a minimum of 25 years. Last month, a jury came to a unanimous verdict and found him guilty of the murder of his wife, Heather Mallory. The jurors agreed Cole strangled Mallory in their Southeast Portland apartment in March 2008 and then dumped her body in the woods outside Estacada. Prosecutors said evidence with Mallory's remains later found by a man working in the woods happened completely by luck, and they believe the discovery sealed Cole's guilt. Is this the situation where she was found with, like, a duffel bag full of his stuff?
I don't know.
Was that this one?
Honestly, the weird domestic stranglings that happen in this city that, you know, just now, apparently, by the way, like, as of, like, 2 minutes ago, apparently there's a bunch of shots being fired in North Portland. Huh. So, you know, it's becoming harder and harder to keep a scorecard for what goes on in the city.
After his conviction, Cole was led out of the courtroom and said, "I love you," to his crying mother. The couple, Heather's parents, Steve and Jenny Mallory, have since cared for their 7-year-old grandson, River, at their home in Washington. And they remained for most of the trial and said they plan to return for his sentencing.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. By the way, Andy, the formerly homeschooled man, weighs in and says, FYI, if you have a migraine, Michelle Bachman, we're looking at you. He says, if you have a migraine, you are to give yourself a brain freeze. He continues, I am not fully clear on the science behind this, but something about making your blood vessels react to the brain freeze gets rid of the migraine. It hurts like the wrath of Jesus for a couple of minutes. But after that, it's gone. A few minutes of pain instead of a few hours. So if anybody happens to come across Michelle Bachman, you just pass along this information from Andy.
Just shove a Slurpee in her mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or that.
Yeah. A South Florida man faces charges after authorities say he tried to illegally sell a marmoset monkey over the internet. The Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission reported Tuesday that agents arrested 26-year-old Jesus Hernandez at his Fort Lauderdale home. Authorities said he was trying to sell the small South American primate for $2,700. Officials say Hernandez did not have a permit to possess the 1-year-old monkey and held it in a cage that did not meet requirements. He was charged with several misdemeanors related to the possession, sale, and caging of wildlife. The monkey was taken to a licensed wildlife facility. Marmosets can be bought and sold legally in Florida, but buyers and sellers must both be registered with the state.
Someone says, brain freeze doesn't work. Stop trafficking in lies. I don't think so. Wait. No, that's not going to happen anytime soon. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. By the way, we've got a couple of questions people are asking about the iTunes posting of Legion of News for Monday and Tuesday. So apparently some issues, as I say, with that. So we're looking into it. Don't forget, when in doubt, you can always get the show as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm. You can also go to legionofnews.com and you can get it there. And I don't know, we'll go rattle the appropriate thing and run something up against something else and see if it sticks or does something. We'll look into it.
Okay.
I mean, not me personally, but I mean, somebody will look into it because, you know, because Rick Emerson cares. Not me, again, personally, or in any actual real way, in point of fact.
No.
I don't care. Okay. Here's Dawn Taylor.
While the President and the Senate spent much of Tuesday praising a proposal from the so-called Gang of Six group of bipartisan senators, the House was busy passing its cut, cap, and balance legislation, a Republican bill that has no chance of passing in the Senate.
Excellent.
The basic takeaway is that despite all the bipartisan backslapping in the Senate, a debt deal isn't right around the corner. Further complicating things is that the Gang of Six proposal hasn't actually been drafted yet, meaning that it may not be finished in time to be part of any deadline-beating deal to raise the debt ceiling. Senator Richard Durbin told The Hill, "It's not ready for prime time," being like Johnny on the spot with cultural references there. "But as a concept, I think we have to have the starting concepts together." Elsewhere, The Hill reports that Senator Mitch McConnell's so-called Plan B option would basically allow Obama to raise the ceiling on his own, has run into its own problems in the House, where Democrats aren't happy with the proposal. Representative Chris Van Hollen said it's designed to protect mostly Republican members of Congress from taking responsibility for votes they've already made. That's the one, I believe, where they just said, you know, Obama, go ahead and just raise it. We'll vote against it, but it'll go through anyway. And then during, you know, election season, we can say, but look, we voted against it. Even though we knew damn well that it was going to happen anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. A bipartisan, the Republican Mike Crapo, not Crapo, I'm sure, but probably Mike Crapo, who is part of the so-called Gang of Six, describes a reaction to their plan.
We put out our ideas yesterday, and almost 50 senators, half of the Senate, showed up. And I think, to a person almost, they were very positive about it.
The plan, by the way, from the so-called Gang of Six, would cut spending, overhaul entitlement programs such as Medicare, rewrite the tax code, and make significant changes to Social Security. It includes roughly $3.75 trillion in savings over 10 years and comes with a $1.2 trillion in new revenues. The proposal's authors, Democrat Mark Warner and Republican Saxby Chambliss, briefed their Senate colleagues on the details earlier in the day and were surprised by the flood of bipartisan support that resulted, according to the Wall Street Journal. Here, Republican Mike Crapo says why he thinks the proposal has a better chance at success than plans that are being floated at White House meetings on the debt crisis.
Our proposal is two or three times larger in its scope, and it's much more comprehensive. It puts everything on the table, dramatically reforms our tax code, and makes America a much more competitive and dynamic economy.
Doesn't Chambliss sound like a kind of wine?
Saxby Chambliss is just a rich bastard. There are no poor people named Saxby Chambliss.
It would sound like Chambliss sounds like some sort of overly sweet sort of not screw cap as such, but you know that'd be a bottom shelf wine at most wine and liquor stores.
It's the Thunderbird of champagnes.
Exactly. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
American Airlines announces a massive plan to replace its commercial fleet with hundreds of new leased planes from Boeing and Airbus. DePaul University transportation professor Joe Schweiderman says it's an important development in the aviation industry.
One second here. This is Airlines. Is that the name of
yes.
this? And he is who?
He is Joe Schweiderman of DePaul University.
Goo goo gajoob. I'm sorry.
Schweiderman!
Okay. Airlines One. Yes.
This is a big story. It breaks a logjam in aircraft orders. We knew this was coming, but this is bigger than we thought. American is going to completely revamp its fleet.
Somebody's doing some drinking.
Schweiderman says the economic climate has made this deal necessary.
They just can't afford to keep flying with these older planes. This will dramatically increase the fuel gain.
You know, what I didn't know, but what I discovered a couple weeks ago, is that Boeing actually still exists here and actually operates here. I thought that everything Boeing did had been moved to, like, Chile or something. But apparently not. Apparently they're still back. Actually, if you head out toward the airport, you'll actually see there are Boeing enclaves out there that are actually still functioning and still in business in the Northwest right now. So learn something every day.
Indeed. Let's do science.
Here's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about it by going to squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric. You can also call them if you like. It's 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. That means if you are building a structure from scratch, you're going to be moving into a place that was formerly used for something quite unlike your current endeavor. Or if you're going to be taking your business, you're going to be putting into your home and having a home-based operation, you want to make sure that everything works properly. Otherwise, all your dreams and hopes will go up in figurative smoke and perhaps literal smoke. I mean, depending on how badly you've managed to miswire or misjudge the situation. So you want to have Squires Electric do that, you can find unsolicited testimonials about their skill and craft at facebook.com/SquiresElectric. While you're there, hit the like button if you would please. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, supervisors, and the proud sponsors of this year's Science in the March here at Legion of News.
Distant and tiny Pluto has been hiding something from Earth, another moon. NASA announced today that the Hubble Space Telescope has found a fourth moon circling Pluto, which had been demoted from a full planet to a dwarf planet. Astronomers had been looking to see if Pluto had a ring, but instead they found another object circling the dwarf planet that is 3 billion miles from Earth. But it is only a mini moon. It's only 8 to 21 miles wide. Pluto's biggest moon, Charon, is 80 times bigger. The other two moons are Nix and Hydra. Until astronomers decide on a name, they're calling it P4.
I don't know. I thought Pluto wasn't a planet.
It's a dwarf planet.
Well, that's still a planet. Would somebody just make up their goddamn mind about what it is? First it's a planet, then it's not a planet, then it's kind of a planet, but it's a different kind of planet altogether. Today it's a subspecies of planet.
It's like a Shetland pony compared to a full horse.
There was that thing where they said, okay, but you're not calling... No, because it's not like that
That's
at all,
true.
Because you'd call that a Shetland horse.
Okay, are there miniature horses? See, it's like a miniature horse compared to a...
There was that thing for like a month they were saying that it was a moon, and that the thing around it was a moon as well. That's where the Colton song gets its hook from.
Yes.
The idea that Pluto was in fact two moons orbiting each other and that neither one of them was a planet. Now it's back to being a planet again, but a planet with an asterisk next to it. It's the Mark McGuire of planets.
Is asterisk an actual a thing? Like a... Never mind.
An asterisk is an actual thing.
I was just trying to come
it's
up
right
with some
above
kind
the
of...
Eight on
I
your
was trying
keyboard.
To come up with some kind of asterisk asteroid joke, and my brain just seized up and it didn't really work.
Well, we'll come back to it later.
Atlantis is set to land on Earth early Thursday, marking the final space shuttle flight. NASA astronaut Sandy Magnus was asked about her plans for a final meal aboard Atlantis.
I don't have anything planned, but I may end up surprising the guys. You know, the problem with the shuttle missions are they're so busy, and this one has been incredibly busy. I haven't had time to do much space cooking, but I did give some tips to the space station guys, so if they had some time, they could try a few of my recipes.
See, it sounds like somebody has remembered how the universe is supposed to operate, Don.
She's a lady.
Just because you get a
little... Her job is to cook the food.
Because you get a little learning doesn't mean that you have to get the important things.
I want to know more about this space cooking. I just
I think
like
it's
the
cooking
idea of,
in space.
I know, but how is it... What... obviously, it's different from regular cooking because they're calling it space cooking.
Well, I think perhaps the fact that there's no gravity plays into it. That's just a guess.
Commander Chris Ferguson says at the end, it's the end of an age where only a select few go to space.
Let's see. Shuttle 2.
I think that what we're going to see in the next few years is a very broadening horizon, an opportunity for people who have never had an opportunity to go into space to at least get to low Earth orbit. And what we'll do is we'll turn over the reins of that business to our commercial partners.
Okay. A prolonged heat wave in the central U.S. has fostered the growth of a dangerous form of algae in lakes and ponds, threatening swimmers and livestock and scaring away tourists during the busy summer season. Blue-green algae are actually bacteria that produce toxins harmful to humans and livestock. It flourishes in warm, stagnant, sunlit water, and this year's heat wave, combined with Oklahoma's worst drought since the Dust Bowl, have created what one water official called a perfect storm for its growth. Except it's not a storm, it's just a stagnant pool of water. Officials have issued a series of warnings telling boaters and swimmers at lakes in northeast Oklahoma, southern Kansas, and Nebraska to avoid contact with the toxic algae. The issue attracted national attention earlier this month when Oklahoma Senator James Inhofe blamed a respiratory illness on a swim in the Grand Lake in Ketchum Hollow. The bad publicity has had dire consequences for some businesses in Oklahoma, where tourism is the third largest industry with an estimated annual impact of $6.2 billion. Oklahoma's numerous lakes are a huge economic engine driving that industry, said Leslie Blair, a spokeswoman for the Department of Tourism and Recreation. Sam Williams, who sells everything from water skis to fishing supplies at the Grand Lake Sports Center in Grove, said, "We took a beating from hell. My friends at the marinas say their shops are full to the ceiling with beer that they haven't sold, all because a senator went into a bad area in a cove and got a rash."
So it's like that black mold that was lurking behind the baseboard at Ed McMahon's house,
right.
Except it's in the water and it's not black and it's not mold.
Right.
But it's exactly like that.
It's exactly the same thing.
Because algae is like water mold,
not.
Right? I mean, algae is sort of, it sounds like it's very much the water-based equivalent of the mold that lurks inside your home and then fills your lungs.
I'm sure Thomas Gill is screaming right now when we're saying that that algae is like water mold, but I will agree with you. Yes,
I didn't say it is
like
water mold. I said it seems as though it is similar too, which seems, I mean, because this is the same thing, because this is the deal that they have in California now where it's like everybody's got to get the black mold coming like scrunched out of their house. Because you can't see it, and it just sort of, and you look at it and you go, well, that's mold, even if you do see it, and you think it's not anything crucial, and then, bam, suddenly, no breathing for you.
And most forms of algae in lakes and such are really beneficial, but sometimes if there's too much of them, they can, like, choke the waterways, and they can poison things. And in this case, this particular kind of algae is apparently toxic, so.
It's from hell.
Yes. Curtains are falling on the final chapter of the Harry Potter movie franchise, so it's time to hang up your invisibility cloak in the hall closet. But don't look so glum, says the person who wrote this. There's a new cloak for your spatio-temporal wardrobe. Maudie Friedman and Alexander Gaeta, professors of applied and engineering physics at Cornell University, had developed a time cloak that, besides sounding like a Kurt Vonnegut trope, can also hide events in time. Physicists have already found ways to make invisibility cloaks by distorting electromagnetic fields and steering light around a volume of space so that essentially anything inside the space is invisible. Friedman and company were able to take that idea a step further and cloak time. In electromagnetic theory, the diffraction and dispersion of light are symmetric in space-time. They built a device that has two lenses called an electro-optic modulator. They sent a beam of light through the lenses. The first lens compressed the light while the second lens decompressed it, leaving a short gap or hole in time where any event went unrecorded.
This isn't true.
To the naked eye, light coming out of the second time lens appeared uninterrupted, as if no distortion had occurred.
Not true. Made up.
In essence, between the two lenses exists a space-time void that cloaks any changes occurring in the short amount of time it takes the light to pass through both lenses.
It doesn't. Just like the invisible cloak doesn't exist. This is like every year when a Harry Potter movie comes out, we have to hear some goddamn story about how, and we've invented a cloak that actually makes things invisible. You haven't. Because if you did, like, we'd all know it. They'd show it. We'd be able to see it somewhere. They'd have it on. Don't you think if we had a cloak that just made crap invisible, it seems like that would be actual big news. Like, they would, like, the headline would say, like, holy crap, invisibility cloak invented.
Yeah, but when they say cloak, they don't really mean an actual thing that somebody puts on. I think they mean, like, a room-sized electronic device and a series of whirring things and things with flashing
buttons. But even
that take, like 12 guys to do.
Even that, if you had a thing that you could just point at something and it just turned... Goddamn, David Copperfield had like a two-hour television special years ago where he made the Statue of Liberty disappear, and he wasn't even really doing it. I mean, if they had a thing you could just point at stuff and it turned it invisible, I mean, Tom Brokaw would be on television right now going, "This just in, crap is insane. We have an invisibility gun. Holy God Almighty in heaven." I mean, it would be a big story.
Now, why do you believe, though, that physicists would lie about creating something that can steer light around something and make something invisible?
The same reason Stephen Hawking lies about time travel, because he knows that you don't know any better. Mm. And because what are you going to do? Go pick a fight with Stephen Hawking? No, for like seven reasons. So, I mean, look, Don, somebody in this room makes stuff up all the time, and she's not even a physicist. So, I mean, imagine if you...
I don't make stuff up.
Mm-hmm. Or are you lying about that? I'm just saying, if we were to do a spot poll of the audience, I think that they might believe that a plurality of your stories were not entirely accurate and were occasionally just fabricated from whole cloth. I'm just saying, you know.
And I don't know why that belief exists, because I don't make stuff up.
Okay. I'm just saying. But imagine if you had like a degree in, you know, astrophysics or something, or quantum mechanics. You could just make stuff up left and right. I mean, you could make stuff up in geometric space. And people would go, well, she's got a degree. She must know what she's talking about. I mean, that's never the case.
Well, anyway, these guys say their time cloak only lasts for 110 nanoseconds anyway.
Okay. So there you go.
That's all the science.
Is that the end of science?
Yes.
You're sure?
Unless I'm making that up.
You're not lying. All right, just checking. There's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com, or you can go to facebook.com/Squires Electric and call 503-252-1609. Ladies and gentlefolk, don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program is next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Today, Clergy Watch, Job Watch, Jackson Watch, also thrice weekly columnist from the Oregonian, Anna Griffin, is going to be in the studio with us as well. Here is John Taylor.
Animal control officers in Los Angeles will now have the power to seize and destroy a dog simply for chasing someone under an ordinance agreed upon Tuesday by the Board of Supervisors. Under the new amendment to existing dog regulations, animal control officers have the right to declare a dog vicious, a designation that can potentially lead to the animal being euthanized. The new measure is more stringent and less tolerant of so-called dangerous dogs and redefines what is considered an aggressive dog. One of the amendments proposed said a dog would not even need to bite someone to cause severe injury. The enhanced ordinance gives dog owners the right to contest animal control's findings in court, but the owner must act within 5 days. The ordinance must return to the board for a final administrative vote. New York City will hold a lottery this week for those couples hoping to tie the knot on Sunday, the first day that same-sex marriage will be legal in the state. Mayor Michael Bloomberg made the announcement Tuesday after it became clear that the city clerk's offices wouldn't be able to handle the influx of couples looking to marry on the day that New York will become the sixth state in the nation to allow gays and lesbians to wed. City officials said they decided to hold the lottery to prevent couples from waiting in line for hours only to be turned away at the last second. City Council Speaker Christine Quinn said, "We want to make sure that Sunday is not like a trip to the Department of Motor Vehicles." In all, 764 couples, both gay and straight, will be selected to get married in one of the clerk's five offices. Lottery winners will get the 3-in-1 package of a marriage license, a waiting period waiver granted on a case-by-case basis, and a ceremony performed by a city official. More than 2,600 couples have already pre-registered for marriage licenses, And officials believe roughly half of that total hope to get married on Sunday.
And this is where, in New York?
In New York.
All right. You're listening to Legion of News. Thank you for joining us. Somebody says, did you really just say if there was an invisibility cloak, we'd be able to see it? Yes, I did. Yes, I did. That's awesome. Sometimes I'm awesome in ways that aren't even really realized at the time. Thank you for pointing that out, sir. Excellent. Do you think it was a little bit of self-generated humor that I didn't even get to laugh at it because ironically enough, the humor went unseen by me. It was like it was visible to everyone else except for the manufacturer of it. All right. And now the grins are mine. Thank you. Lulls for all. Here's Don Taylor.
New home construction rose nearly 15% in June in the U.S. Real estate analyst Mike Larson says builders still don't have much incentive to start new projects just yet.
If they do gain confidence on the direction of the economy, if we can whittle down that mountain of existing home inventory that's competing with new homes, then you're going to see construction activity pick up.
Is he just talking about demolishing houses? If we can whittle down the existing home inventory, what does that mean?
I think he means if more people actually buy new homes.
Oh, I see. So he's not going to go up with some oil-soaked rags.
Yeah.
Look, Chester and I are going to solve this housing crisis once and for all tonight.
Well, and unsurprisingly, if you think about the economy and the way things have gone, I was listening to a story about this on the radio the other day that, yes, new home construction has kind of stagnated. Yeah, it rose nearly 15%, which really is very little. But part of that is because contractors and builders are building more apartment complexes. You know, they're kind of forward-thinking people going, well, if we build places for people to live and people can't afford to buy houses, how about we build more apartment buildings?
We should build tiny houses.
We should. Have you seen some of those tiny houses on the websites where the guy, you can buy plans for tiny houses?
When you say tiny.
Guy? I mean, they're tiny. They're like 400 to like 800 square feet.
We should build
a tiny little house.
Studio apartments that are shaped like mansions. You know what I mean? Like the size of this studio. You know, which is, I mean, I think my first studio apartment was actually about this size. It was a tiny studio apartment, but then the artifice, you know, the facade out front just has like four pillars, you know, and a lawn jockey.
And lions.
Yeah. And he just sort of, welcome to my manse. And then you go inside and then it's just, you know, and then it's just a tiny room. I'd be all over that.
Larson is skeptical that this is the start of a significant recovery for the housing market.
If you look back to what happened in December and January, we also saw a pop in permits and starts there, but that then fizzled out again.
All right. Somebody says, I'd prefer a home that wouldn't fall over from a small wind and isn't made out of the same material as a can of tuna or, you know, mud. Well, fine. Fine if you're going to be all hoity-toity about it, if you're going to be demanding.
Get a load of Mr. Fancy Pants.
Why you can't have nice things, sir.
A 28-year-old woman and a 31-year-old man were arrested July 8th for allegedly trying to take goods from Walmart in Fort Walton Beach, Florida.
Good, of course, is sort of a figurative description here.
Allison Marie Adams, who was charged with felony larceny and crimes against merchants, and her boyfriend, Grover Lewis Espy, were charged with felony probation violation and two misdemeanors after they were caught hiding steaks in her purse while in the furniture section of the Walmart. According to an Okaloosa County Sheriff's report, the couple allegedly stole 7 ribeye steaks. When they were leaving, a loss prevention officer tried to stop them, but they ran to their car and drove away. The items were valued at $105.67. Wow, 7 steaks are worth $105.
What is his name?
His name is Grover Lewis Epsi.
Is she dating a jazz musician from 1922?
Or a Muppet.
Okay.
Adams is scheduled to appear in court August 16th. Epsi is scheduled to appear in court July 26th.
Isn't Epsi? No, I'm thinking of Etsy.
Yes.
Okay.
They were going to sell the steaks after they crafted them into crappy jewelry.
Angel Fire was arrested for stealing steaks from Walmart today.
A Columbia University student accused of participating in a drug ring at the Ivy League college pleaded guilty on Tuesday to selling cocaine. The student, Harrison David, will serve 6 months in prison on New York's Rikers Island and face 5 years of probation. The plea marked the latest chapter in a series of events that began when the NYPD began investigating the matter in August of last year, dubbing the inquiry Operation Ivy League. That was clever.
That's just dumb.
Yeah. To pin down the drug charges, the police made nearly $11,000 in purchases of cocaine, marijuana, ecstasy, Adderall, and LSD from 5 suspected students, including Harrison.
One of these drugs is not like the other.
Charges are still pending against the other 4 men allegedly involved in the ring. Matthew Myers, David's attorney, told the New York Times on Tuesday that his client was sorry for his actions. He has huge regrets about it, his lawyer said. I think he is taking responsibility for it. He is not being combative. He is not disgruntled about the results.
Maybe they stole the Adderall first so they could figure out the plan for stealing all the other drugs.
Yes.
Like, they really had to be able to focus to figure out how to get the cocaine from the guy.
Well, imagine in an Ivy League school, things that help you focus on your studies are probably quite popular on the black market.
You know what they have is there's that drug, that Provigil drug, which I think Paris Hilton is on, which sounds fantastic. There's a guy I kind of know who's a stockbroker who I believe finagled his way into some sort of prescription for that because it's like some ultra hyper focus kind of drug. Yeah.
How do you get that? What has to be wrong with you to even get that?
I think it's for narcoleptics.
Oh.
And so it's the opposite of narcolepsy. It's just sort of, I can't seem to sleep, and I just have all this energy, and I'm awake all the time. I guess I might as well short sell some stocks. And it's also hugely popular among competitive video gamers, like guys who play Counter-Strike for a living. There's apparently a thriving market in prescribing ADHD meds to them.
I want that. I need to convince somebody that I have, like, something, that I can get stuff like that.
You should become forgetful and have automotive mishaps. Well, you're halfway there.
Yeah, I am.
Just go crash into something with your car.
Oh, see, I don't want to do that.
Well, you're not trying hard enough, Don.
Apparently, I'm not committed to it enough.
Nope.
At any rate, David, who's an engineering major at Columbia, said he had aspirations to become a rocket scientist. He grew up in the Boston suburbs where he played tennis in high school and gave a graduation speech as class salutatorian. Meyer said David's guilty plea was a fair resolution. He said, you're talking about a brilliant kid. And yet he got caught selling drugs in school. So.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program is next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Today we'll talk about clergy watch. We got this clergy watch coming up. We got the job watch coming up. We got the Jackson watch coming up. We'll talk more about this interview with the Burgerville CEO that happened this morning, which was awesome, by the way. And Anna Griffin, thrice weekly columnist from The Oregonian, will join us in studio as well. Oh, and we'll have the top five. Top five musicians who attended Harvard in honor of Anna Griffin becoming a Nieman Fellow, and I believe this is her last appearance on the show before she moves back east to go to Harvard.
She already filed her last column with The Oregonian until she comes back. So
really?
This is her last appearance.
Was it a tearjerker?
I didn't actually read it. I just saw her mention on Facebook that that was her thing. I was doing other things.
Okay. So you have a sort of a Cliff's Notes version of...
Yes. I know it happened.
All right.
I haven't actually read it yet.
So we'll be doing the top five musicians who attended Harvard. That'll be today's top five. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do some entertainment news.
There's your entertainment news for... Wednesday.
Actress Betty White declined Sergeant Ray Lewis's invitation to be his guest at the Marine Corps Ball.
My dance card is full.
I am deeply flattered and truly appreciate the invitation, she said in a statement. As everyone knows, I love a man in uniform, but unfortunately I cannot accept as I will be taping an episode of Hot in Cleveland. Lewis posted his video request on YouTube. Harry Potter actress Emma Watson will spend her junior year studying at Oxford and then will return her senior year to complete her studies at Brown University. Watson, who's 21, denies rumors that she was being hounded at Brown by fans. I've never even been asked for an autograph on campus, she said. I threw a party for nearly 100 students and not a single person put a photo on Facebook. American Idol judge Jennifer Lopez traveled to the Ukraine to perform at the wedding of billionaire Serhii Taruta's daughter, reports Us Weekly. For her services, Lopez will earn $1 million. Singing at a wedding. Writer Stephen King was not too happy when Universal decided to not move forward with doing a film based on the Dark Tower franchise. Ron Howard was attached to direct the film, with Javier Bardem set as the lead role. I'm sorry Universal passed, but not really surprised, said King. As a rule, they've been about smaller and less risky pictures. Maybe they'll feel it'll be better to stick with those Fast and Furious racing boys. I bear them no ill will.
Yes, we were all looking forward to the chance to a studio to ruin yet another Stephen King property.
Yes.
Damn.
Ah. The X Factor judge, Nicole Scherzinger, took to her Twitter page to address rumors that she's engaged to race car driver Lewis Hamilton, her boyfriend of 4 years. I don't know who either of these people are.
Yeah, you do. She's in the Pussycat Dolls. And because the last time you asked me, I told you she was in the Pussycat Dolls.
Okay.
Hey, that Provigil, I can smell it on the way for you right now.
Really? Because I didn't remember who a Pussycat Doll is?
Well, it's really that you didn't file away a piece of information that I, Rick Emerson, gave to you.
Here it is, posted the Pussycat Doll singer. It says, Lewis and I woke up this morning and read we were engaged. Sorry to disappoint you all, just a letter U, but it's not true, she said. A spokesman for R. Kelly says the R&B singer is in the hospital after emergency throat surgery. Kelly publicist Ellen Mayer said Wednesday the doctors drained an abscess on one of Kelly's tonsils on Tuesday.
Usually he's the one who's draining the abscess, if you know what I mean.
And that the singer will be laid up indefinitely at Chicago's Northwestern Memorial Hospital. You know what's good for an abscess? Urine.
Yeah.
He should look into that. Mayer said Kelly has been complaining of throat pain recently and was rushed to the hospital after a throat exam. Roku is ready to hatch the popular Angry Birds video game on a new version of its set-top box for streaming online entertainment to TVs. The addictive game and a controller will be included on a Roku box that will sell for $100. Prices for boxes that don't include Angry Birds and the game controller will range from $60 to $80. Roku Incorporated announced the prices for its next-generation players Wednesday. The devices will go on sale this month. Roku's disclosed its plans to add Angry Birds last month. The new box represents the first time that Angry Birds can be easily played on a high-definition TV screen. The game has been downloaded on more than 200 million devices since its 2009 debut.
Not that I really care about this, but I know that they're going to be putting Angry Birds out in a 3D version, I think, next month, too. There's going to be one of the handheld Android devices has a 3D Angry Birds, which I have avoided playing like the plague just because I see what it does to people around me.
Oh.
Don't get me started on that Tiny Towers game, too. I'm not going to be playing that either.
Mine that I have problems with is one called Tiny Wings, where you make a little bird fly and you tap on it to swoop him down into divots between hills. And I that's the one that I play compulsively. I can't stop playing that stupid game.
Yeah, the first thing I did when I got my iPhone was to disable the game app and just remove it from the phone altogether. I mean, I could put it back at some point, but I haven't because I just know that I would get sucked into playing Plants vs. Zombies or something. I never get anything done.
Plants vs. Zombies is not as much fun on the iPhone. It's too small. There's too many things going on.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
It might be fun on the iPad, but not on the phone.
I'm fine with that.
Where are we here? New episodes of South Park's 15th season start up October 5th on Comedy Central. In other Comedy Central news, the network has renewed Nick Swardson's Pretend Time for a second season. I'm very excited to be back on a second season, said Swardson in a statement. I feel that now more than ever, our country needs to see a cat in a wheelchair doing cocaine, as do the children.
Hey, now you just can't give the South Park thing like that. Is there any additional information on the second half of the season?
I really don't know about that. I do have a, probably, we'll call it a geek watch for next hour, where there is this huge, elaborate South Park sort of pavilion going on that Comedy Central has rolled out a gazillion things to celebrate the 15 years at Comic-Con. And it's just sort of crazy and amazing. There's like a whole South Park land at Comic-Con. So,
all right. Well, we'll talk more about that next hour because there's lots to discuss there.
Yeah. Dutch actress Carice van Houten, you may remember her from Valkyrie and Repo Men, and Stephen Delane of HBO's John Adams will star in the second season of Game of Thrones. Delane will play Stannis Baratheon, brother of the late King Robert, and van Houten will star as the woman who counsels Stannis. First Lady Michelle Obama will guest star on an October episode of ABC's Extreme Makeover Home Edition. On Thursday, she will travel to Fayetteville, North Carolina, to work on a community resource center for homeless female veterans. Obama is promoting her Joining Forces initiative, which she co-founded with Dr. Jill Biden. The initiative provides support to military vets and their families.
Yes, I'm sure that everybody in New Orleans is glad that the Obama administration is going to be making something over in Fayetteville. Because there's nothing anywhere else in the country, like in New Orleans, that is still waiting to be made over.
No.
You know, from like 6 years ago.
So replacing Bette Midler on HBO's Phil Spector biopic is Helen Mirren. Midler was playing Spector's defense attorney, Linda Kenny Baden, and she left the project after suffering a herniated disc. And now Helen Mirren is replacing her. Al Pacino is playing Spector in the yet-to-be-titled film with Jeffrey Tambor on board as lawyer Bruce Cutler. And I believe that's all our entertainment.
There's your entertainment news for for Wednesday right here at Legion of News at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. You can take it with you on your mobile device as well. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Records show nearly 60,000 of California's more than 2 million disabled parking placards issued by the DMV may have been sent to dead people. The DMV checks state death records every 2 years, and the Los Angeles Times says this year's cross-check uncovered about 56,000 deceased placard holders. The DMV misses many deceased people because of mismatched birth dates. The DMV says fraudulent use of disabled parking placards, which allow motorists to park for free or in special designated spaces, is on the rise. More than a third of the placards displayed in vehicles are being used illegally. The DMV says it's studying ways to make the process more efficient.
And how is it that they're going to, how do they stop that?
How do they stop sending them to dead people?
Well, no, but just, it's like that they're being, it didn't say just for dead people, it's that what percentage are being used illegally?
Yeah, they're also being, some, like a third or something are being used fraudulently.
I mean, so what is it that they, how is it that you crack down on that?
I really don't know, because the thing is, with handicap placards, you don't have to be obviously physically disabled to have one.
Couldn't you have some emotional handicap?
Well, when I filled out my paperwork for mine, for example, because I was really surprised and pleased to find out that I could get one, all you have to do is say, hey, doctor, would you sign this? And the doctor says, okay. But also when I was looking at the paperwork, among the things you can get one for is for inflammatory bowel syndrome.
Well, I can see why that makes sense.
Well, yes. But the thing is, if you're getting out of your car and you're parked in a handicap space, you could look. You're not limping or getting into a wheelchair or something. You could look like a perfectly healthy person and have Crohn's disease, and people will see you and they won't know. So I'm not sure how they would, unless they make their son, because the placards are not connected to the license plate or the particular car you're driving. You were actually issued them, and they're all numbered and everything, but they are issued to you, an individual, and I think they're registered to you through your driver's license.
It seems like if you were, quote, surprised that you could get one, it seems like that maybe is evidence that you shouldn't have been given one.
Well, if you ever go to, like, the movies on, like, a Saturday afternoon and try to find a space in the 30 handicap spots at, like, Bridgeport Village, and you realize they're all taken, you think to yourself, I don't think there's that many actual crippled people here.
No, I do not believe that's the case.
No. So I have no trouble believing that about a third of the people don't really deserve them.
There is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Authorities say a Florida man faces federal misdemeanor charges after witnesses reported seeing him wandering around a National Forest campground naked and armed with a pistol. Joseph Alfiera is charged with being publicly nude and causing annoyance. Authorities said they were called Sunday to the Cobble Rest Campground at the Uinta Wasatch Cache National Forest near Heber City in California. In Utah. They say witnesses reported seeing Alfieri wandering around the woods wearing nothing but a gun holster while carrying a pistol and yelling at the river.
Okay.
Rangers later arrested the man and seized two pistols and a knife. Alfieri of North Miami pleaded not guilty to the charges this week. He was released from custody pending trial.
Does it indicate what his larger plan was? Or
no, he was just wearing nothing.
All right.
But a gun holster.
Doesn't really say what his intentions were.
Carrying his pistol and yelling at the river.
Okay.
Maybe, it doesn't say if it was daytime or nighttime. It might be nighttime. He was trying to sleep, and he felt the river was too loud.
The babbling of the brook was, in fact, too...
Yes. He's from Miami, so he's not used to the sounds of nature.
All right. Fair enough. We got time for, one more here. We got about 60 seconds.
Well, I don't have any more.
That's a lie.
I used all my news. Okay. Here's one.
There's like 700 things right in front
of
you.
Those are for next time.
Yes, you better save those. Better save those for next hour. We always get to lots of news.
On the surface, there's a man who seemed like an ideal candidate as a romantic partner on one of China's popular dating shows. The 39-year-old music teacher Liu Hao wooed the audience with his soulful singing and won fans as he duked it out against a competing bachelor. One woman was so entranced, she picked him out of 8 eligible bachelors on the Happy League dating show in China. But it turns out that he's also been detained after the police received an anonymous tip more than a month ago from a viewer who recognized him as a suspect in a murder case from the 1990s. Although his square jaw had rounded out and his crew cut had been replaced with a more stylish buzz, his button nose and soft features gave way to a familiar face. Police watched the tapes, and indeed, Liu resembled Wu Gang, who stabbed a man to death more than 13 years ago outside a restaurant. Lee told the Associated Press that after the month-long investigation, he was detained as a key suspect in the case. Police said Liu had become accustomed to his new identity and fooling everyone around him, so he didn't think twice about going on a television show.
Okay. Does it really describe him as having a button nose?
A button nose.
It's a strangely jocular description.
Yeah. They said he managed to escape the law for so long, he became overconfident about not being caught.
Excellent. And with that, we do... This which is to bring the curtain down on another exciting episode of Legion of News. Thank you for joining us. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology, Magic Buffet, Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer, Bruce Eichel, Chief of Staff, Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com today, featuring Clergy Watch, Job Watch, Anna Griffin from the Oregonian, and the top five musicians who attended Harvard. You stay right there if you're a Rick Emerson subscriber. You can find out more about that at rickemersonshow.com. We will see you again tomorrow here at Cascadia.fm for another exciting installment of Legion of News. Thank you for joining us. Have a good day, won't you?